Hey everybody, so welcome to the call. It's Tad from marketingforhippies.com. And so this is one of the bonus calls in the Niching for Hippies program. And I'm so excited to be doing this one in particular because we're joined by David Waugh, who I'll introduce in just a moment. But so when we talked about, the more I thought about niching, the more it's become really clear that it's important that the niche is something that's authentic to us. And this whole idea of the seed came about of looking at our own sort of wounds and struggles and journeys in our life and what that has prepared us for in our own life. And looking at what we've overcome as something that we can give back as a gift to the community. And part of that too, I think is looking at this intersection of the gifts that we have, how we can be weaving those into what we're offering, because that may also affect our niche and affect the way that we do our work. And I'd come across David through a friend and colleague, Michael Talbot Kelly in Vancouver, lovely man, and David and Michael work together. And years ago, I'd come across a friend of mine who did this work that actually came out of the Catholic Church, I believe, called Gifts of the Spirit, and just looking at the gifts that people have inherently and naturally. And I heard David was involved in that kind of work and did similar types of things. And so something about it just had me want to have David as a guest in this, and he graciously volunteered to do that in support of you all. And so here we are. So, David, I'm wondering if you could maybe give a bit about your story of how you came to be here and sort of what you do now and how you came to be here. And yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. I work as a mentor and psychotherapist at Meaningful Life Design Center, and that's very much a new career in the second half of my life. The first half, I was more in the electrical field, and I had the proverbial midlife crisis. And through that crisis, I really started to dig deep and ask what was meaningful and purposeful for me to do. And it was quite a journey, and through one of my mentors suggested that I keep a journal that he called a soul journal. Soul in the sense of, in psychology, psyche is a Greek word for soul. So I started to keep a journal, and over time I started to see that there were certain patterns. And it turned out a kind of map. And only by reflection, I started to see that, wow, there was certain stages of the journey that I went through. And, I mean, you see this articulated in a lot of the great traditions, like Joseph Campbell has been a real master in his series, The Power of Myth, how he shows many cultures and traditions had adventurers who mapped the inner and outer journey and then kind of left something of a map for others to follow. Of course, they had to go on their own journey, but the map and journey are like archetypal expressions of this path to a deeper life where we start to really reflect on what our gifts are and orient them towards some sort of meaningful need we see in the world, and that gives us a sense of passion and purpose.
I love it. And so, and how did you get involved with the, I know you don't call it the Gifts of the Spirit work, but how did you get involved and connected with that work?
Yeah, it started very early on with, I would say, one of the first mentors that I found when I was lost in my midlife crisis. In that crisis, all my old identities didn't work anymore. I had been running a business, and I left that. My marriage broke down, so I was no longer a husband and a father and a worker. So all those identities that I really, you know, I thought when people would ask me who I am, I would describe myself in those terms. But when I left all that, it was like, you know, the deep question, who am I, started to haunt me. And I had some time, and I had some means, so then I started to explore. And one of the first mentors I came across was a fellow named James Hillman, who just passed away last year. And he has a wonderful book called The Soul's Code. And that was my first hint that there's some sort of code, there's some sort of pattern, and it's really unique to each person. And the metaphor that he used was just like the acorn that has the blueprint of the mighty oak tree, it's that specific. Each person has something of a unique pattern, and that's very different from a lot of how the culture represents us as more of a blank slate. I think the term is tabula rasa. And so it's actually echoed in many indigenous traditions around. And like you say, the Catholic mystics also discovered that people have these innate or inherent gifts of spirit, is the way they articulate it. But James Hillman called it the soul's code. And then I started in my research. I met an African shaman who really still, he's quite modern in the sense he has a couple of PhDs, but he went through a traditional initiation. His name is Maladoma Somme. And he says in their culture, when the mother is pregnant with the new child, the medicine person or the shaman actually interviews the child when it's in the womb. Through a kind of hypnosis, I suppose, and they find out that the child has a unique purpose, a unique destiny. And so this is probably the oldest tradition on the face of the planet, since modern research is showing that we all originated in Africa at one point, that this is an ancient idea, is that each person is unique, and how to find that uniqueness and have it unfold. But often our education system focuses on kind of standardized testing, and there's a lot of mixed messages like you can be anything you want to be. Well, that's kind of like telling the acorn that it could be a rose or a sunflower, where it's actually more precise in, you know, we're fortunate if we can be who we're meant to be. And that's going to take some help, I think, some guidance.
Mm. So one thing that I've been sort of sitting with, I actually don't feel like I have a real clear sense of, is, so on one hand, we're sort of born with this nature, this blueprint, these gifts. And on the other hand, and so that those gifts in some ways can define our destiny and where we're going. But on the other hand, what I've seen is the way that so many people find their work in the world is by looking back at their wounds and sort of, you know, what have they struggled to overcome in their own life? And then that often becomes sort of the medicine they can give back to the community. So on a sort of simple level, maybe they struggled with cancer and then they end up either healing that or trying to heal that. And then that becomes a gift they give back in terms of helping other people who've struggled or are struggling with cancer. And I'm curious how you see the connection between our gifts and our wounds and the sort of the hero's journeys piece.
Yeah, that's actually can be a very accurate way to discover it. In my work, I describe myself now as a mentor and psychotherapist. So the psychotherapist part is we work with what we call depth psychotherapy. So that's very much going into the direction of the wound. And how I like to phrase it is, if you go into the core wound, then after a while it can become like a womb that can birth something of your gifts. So just like you described, for me it was very much that. I had some wounds that I had to work through, and they became barriers to even knowing about my gifts. And then when I found some mentors, there was a natural attraction to particular mentors who were storytellers. have a real resonance now that I see the pattern with mentors who are storytellers. And here I was an electrician, you know, with a four-wheel drive and a baseball cap. You know, it's like I felt so out of that milieu, but I kept following the impulse, the attraction, and now I do the same work as my mentors. So it was like I went so far into the wound that it became a womb and then started to birth the gifts. So that's one direction. There are other ways, and ways that I get at somebody's gifts is through a guided facilitation process that goes through different layers of, say, their ego personality into deeper parts of them. So, you know, depending on your tradition and the language you're comfortable with, it could go into the soul or spirit realms, and those deeper parts of us already know what our gifts are, what our desires and our leanings are. But if people are mostly identified with their ego / personality, then it's kind of like the waves on the ocean. They're crashing around on the surface, but they haven't had help to really dive into the depths. And one of the places to look is in our dreams. So an example from my own life, at one point I dreamed of quite a wise old man who was very loving and compassionate toward me, and I was really touched. I've had mentors who have been like that, but to have somebody like that in my dream, and it was kind of a simple dream. I was like the typical seeker, asking him all kinds of questions, and then he just, with infinite patience and love, just looked at me really kindly and said, "Dave, all you have to do is relax." And when he said that, in the middle of the dream, I felt this deep relaxation, and this incredible energy went through my body, which was so startling that it woke me up, and I thought, wait a second, this is more than a dream. And then I started to feel a bit, my mind started to race. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. And so then I just kind of said to myself, well, just relax, just like the elder had said. And sure enough, the energy just coursed through my body again. And having worked as an electrician, I knew something about energy, and it just about lit up my dark bedroom. And it kind of terrified me at the time. And many years later, when I learned to work with dreams, and now I can dialogue with this inner elder that was trying to contact me through my dreams. And so if I'm really stuck from a limited perspective, then I have various ways I can try to dialogue and get that that perspective that's much more loving than maybe my the different parts of myself that are more crashing around the surface of the ocean.
And do you feel like, it's funny, there's a Chinese proverb that came to mind, which is that stress is who you think you should be, relaxation is who you are.
Yeah, I think that is right on, because what I think this culture is so emphasized is doing, and that I am who, you know, what I do, where when we really relax into being, being is like the ground of being. It's like resting into our true nature. And I think a lot of people are afraid to stop. I certainly was. And I had to kind of crash in order to stop in my midlife. And that midlife crisis turned into what I like to call a midlife awakening process. And you'll probably see on my website, I use the metaphor of map a lot. So mentor and psychotherapist spells map. Meaning and purpose spells map. I have a meditative awakening process. So I use map and compass a lot, because what I found is the culture really supported me as a man to be independent and kind of avoidant in my relationships, where what I'm learning is we're profoundly interdependent, and we really need relationships. We really need love. This kind of emphasis on the individual has really gotten into, I think, a kind of narcissistic proportions, where discovering our gifts, well, we find that there's different levels. There's gifts that are for us. If we rest into that true nature, into the ground of just being, then we can go into this vast spaciousness of, say, you know, just pure awareness. And then it's a place of not doing. It's just resting into being. And then what I find out of that can emerge the first subtle gift to us, which can be, say, the quality of peace or compassion or courage, for example, to continue in the face of not knowing who you are. So right. those kind of gifts in the traditions are called essential qualities. And it's, you know, the most subtle form that emerges out of the formlessness. And then out of that, the next level that emerges is our, what I like to call the natural gifts.
Mm.
That it's natural to us to be born with these gifts. Now, these gifts are not so much for us, they're for others.
Mm.
So I know you have this amazing gift of facilitation, just to name one of them. And I would say another one is encouragement. You know, these two wonderful gifts that I see you really, you know, mentoring others to bring a playfulness and a down-to-earthness to your bringing people home to marketing in a different way. So these two gifts are for the community, for the village. So if you give these gifts to a meaningful need, and there's your niche, you know, you've really found this niche for yourself. So if you identify these are the people that I serve with these gifts, now there's the accurate sense of purpose. Is only when you give those gifts, you'll really feel a sense of meaning and purpose. So those gifts are for the community. And so then that starts to weave this great web of interdependence. And if everyone, now this comes, I found from the native traditions, that they were really a gift culture. There's a wonderful book called The Gift by Lewis Hyde, where he really looks at many indigenous traditions where they really saw that each one of us were a gift from the Creator. And so then, like, even every animal's a gift, you know, like the dog, for example, has the gift of loyalty and faithfulness and joy, and even the cedar tree has the gift of healing. So the native tradition really saw this prosperity or this abundance of the creation as gifts from the Creator. So it wasn't a barter system, and it was much more of a sense of a mutual collaboration that, of course, if you have a gift, you're meant to give it. And everybody's participating on that level, so then there was a real prosperity of the gift. And so there wasn't a sense of scorekeeping. There was just a sense of, it feels good. It feels like you're part of the community. It's part of the village, too. And it's very precise. There's certain gifts I have, and there's certain gifts I really don't have, like marketing. So you've been really helpful to me in that area. So it's like, you know, we really need each other. So if we get inflated with a sense of, oh, I have this gift, you know, then that's the wrong direction. It's more of like, how can I serve with my gift? And there's some gifts I don't have, so then I really need to network with others. So then we start to form a, like a tribe, a village, a place of, you know, community. And there's, it's really the antidote to all this loneliness I think people are feeling.
And how, in that tradition, the natural gifts work. How many gifts are there?
Well, the Christian mystics identified, I think, well, it depends on who you read on this. Now, they're steeped in Christianity, so their gifts, they sound very Christian the way they talk about them. Mm. So, like, for example, the gift of encouragement is, everyone can, you know, relate to that. But the gift of speaking of, in tongues, you know, things like that. So some people have said, well, you know, this tradition goes way back to the Africans and the native people. And so I like to call them natural gifts because, and then, you know, we're really entering this time of a, I would say, kind of a universal spirituality. As soon as we landed a person on the moon and we could look back and see the Earth as one being, really, this beautiful blue-green planet, then from that perspective, you see no borders. And I think there was a tremendous shift in consciousness where we saw that, oh, even all the religions and governments were really operating on like a tribalistic perspective that was acting, you know, in separation. You know, the essence of the traditions you find in the mystics of all the traditions, and they all speak the same language, you know, of it comes down to, like the Dalai Lama says, you know, my religion is compassion and kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some of the gifts I just finished starting with Michael and some other friends, a nonprofit society called the Natural Gifts Society. And so what we want to start is natural gift circles so that people can start to create community around this idea, and then they can start to really discover their gifts. I sometimes use a testing process for that, but what I've found is that we all have kind of a test taker. And sometimes it's, you know, kind of oriented towards, you know, doing well on the test and getting certain results. But in the guided facilitation process that I've developed, then I bypass. First, I honor and respect the person's egoic voices, the parts of them that they're familiar with, but then I invite them into a deeper discussion of talking to the parts of their psyche or soul that's much deeper and more ancient. And so when they get it from that direction, often it comes up in sometimes a poetic way or a way that really resonates with the person.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all kinds of different ways to come at it. But one is to really look for feedback from other people, you know, to follow your desire. One of my mentors puts it poetically, if you meet somebody you're really attracted to, they're like this wonderful tree that's standing in a glade in the forest, and somehow you're really attracted to this tree. So you take out your lasso and you throw it around this tree, and then you pull yourself up closer to the tree. I thought it was a poetic way of saying, if you meet an elder, and I've been so blessed to meet so many wonderful elders that I've been attracted to. So it's kind of like one of my teachers says, it's like the rosebud meeting the rose, and you know, just you can't wait to be around that person because somehow it sheds some light on your bud, and there's a quickening, and all of a sudden it cracks open, and it might be painful in that wound stage, but then it starts to shoot forth and take root and start to unfold into becoming the rose, just like and give off the fragrance of that teacher, you know, in your unique way. So it's hard to talk about these things except in metaphor, but it's really beautiful to be part of, you know, the transformational process. And usually, like, nature is such a great guide, and that's why I like to call them natural gifts. You see it in the transformation of the caterpillar to the butterfly. There's no way from one to the other except to go through the cocooning process.
Mm.
And that process is a place where the caterpillar consciousness really has to break down.
Right.
And it could be incredibly scary if you don't have the right kind of support when you're going through that wound, you know, that breaking down process and that dissolving. But if the cocoon is tight enough, if you got your circle of support and you've got a mentor and elders, allies, and I say that can even come from dreams, if that cocoon is tight enough, then they say, you've probably heard the metaphor a lot, but, you know, then the imaginal cells, which are the first inclinations of the butterfly emerging, that's the dream for your new life. And so what we encourage people to do when they really commit to that cocooning process, that the dreams start to come, then we invite them to create a collage or something that really represents that dream for their new life. But just to know that the old consciousness, the caterpillar, is going to probably test that, and that comes from the individual, but it also comes from family and friends and, you know, people that are afraid if we change too much. So there's a kind of caterpillar consciousness in the culture that really resists a lot of change.
Mm.
So we really need some support, but maybe not from the people we're used to, but from people who can be really allies for our transformational process and can really celebrate that, you know, if we really go deeply into the cocoon, we can emerge with these gifts that'll really give us a passionate orientation for the rest of our life.
And it strikes me too how that's not just true for the support we need, but how each of us can be that support for other people going through their own cocooning process. And when people have really taken the time to clarify what their wounds are and what are those gifts they want to give to the community, how they become that for others. One thing I was curious about was if you can give some more examples of gifts, because I think sometimes, you know, when people think about, okay, well, yeah, we have natural gifts, you know, some people are good at public speaking, some people are good at cooking or whatever. But I'm wondering if you can give examples of what these types of gifts might be. You've mentioned encouragement, the gift of facilitation.
Yeah, like a simple one one idea that I like very much is that there's a deep democracy in the gifts. If they all come from the source, from the creator, from the spirit, you know, whatever, use whatever word that, you know, resonates for you. I think all the words kind of fall short of describing this mystery. If we describe it too much, then it starts to lack the mystery. But there's a democracy of the gifts because they all emerge from that source. So one that I really love is I love to kind of hunt for gifts. It's become quite a passionate art for my wife and I. So we were in a restaurant recently, and it was a Thai restaurant. And you could tell most of the people that were working there really didn't want to be there, or that it was just a job to them. But there was a young woman there who really had the gift of service. And she completely just made our night. You know, and you could tell there was a young apprentice, too, that was really had her eye on her. You know, so for me in that moment, it was like, you know, here's a simple but direct experience of the divine, of the source. In her spirit of service, she was in her joy serving people. And so for her, the job was not a drudgery. It wasn't an in-between place. It was like she has the gift of service. Another example is a friend of mine that she has really the gift of administration. You know, she's just incredible with organizing documents and having great logical thinking for planning. Well, she was working for an organization that she wasn't too happy working for. And so she assumed that, oh, maybe this isn't my gift. Well, it's important then to match the gift with a meaningful need you see in the world. So anyway, she's come over and is part of our nonprofit foundation now. And her gifts of administration, we're so appreciative for this gift because none of the rest of us have it. Not like her anyway. So it's like now it's matched with a meaningful need, and she just has so much joy because we're all really, for one, confirming that it's such a gift. But we have a group of gifts, like she's also a healer. And so you know, maybe I should send her to you because with some marketing help, you know, if she can marry her gift of healing with her gift of administration, then she could really start to, you know, make a living doing what she loves to do. Now, you know, there's a job, there's work, which can pay the bills, but the old term vocation or calling, I think, really applies when we can give our gifts to a meaningful need, and then we're paid for doing so, like you with your vocation. Or if you don't need the money, or you do have a job that pays the bills, you can do it, give your gifts as an avocation. So this, you know, there's so much volunteer work. So this same friend, she has also the gift of service. So we go to, we both love music. So there's a wonderful, the Rogue Folk Club, where she volunteers to set up chairs and, again, a meaningful need, you know, so she's happy to go and greet people at the door and give her gift of service because she gets a free admission right. for one thing, but she's also giving her gift by serving in the community and serving something that she wants to promote more of, which is music.
That brings up another gift. I seem to recall hearing from my other friend who was in this, the gift of hosting. That some people are just have this wonderful gift of creating spaces for people and having people feel welcome, and that just comes naturally to them. You know, if somebody came over, they just automatically offer them tea and have them sit down, and They just have this incredible gift of creating this safe space. And other people just may not have that. That's just not in them. They don't naturally move in that way.
That's so true. We often call it the gift of hospitality. And remember when you came to town and you just called up Michael and I and said, I want to gather some friends and bring some music and, you know, where would be a warm place to do that? And Michael's really got that gift of hospitality. In fact, his whole family does. So we met at his house, and then you brought some friends that played some great music. And Michael organizes so many gatherings at his home. And so it's really, one thing about the gifts is sometimes it comes so naturally to you, you don't even, you take it for granted. So it takes, you know, really other people to feed it back to you saying, hey, we're going to have a gathering. I think I want you as the person who's going to greet people and really make them feel at welcome and at home. So this idea of the starting natural gifts circles is our hope is to have, you know, create community by people really witnessing each other's gifts, you know, and to celebrating that so they can, if they have a gift that they're taking for granted, then they can, you know, really get that feedback from others that, wow, okay, I struggle with that. Yeah, this comes easily to you. And for some people, it could be really dormant. It's not been, as say, they have resistance to even looking at that. For example, somebody who's, say, a lawyer or something who, you know, it's been their whole family has kind of said, this is the direction you need to fall in and join father's firm or, you know, that's been his instructions at a man, this is what a man should do or something.
Yeah.
And then he finds out just through maybe his wife that he has a real gift of touch. She loves it when he gives her a massage.
Mm.
And then so she encourages him to take a little workshop on massage, and turns out he does have this major gift of healing through his hands. And so at midlife he decides to go get training to be a massage therapist. And he has so much more joy focused on that as a sense of purpose and calling.
I'm curious if you can think of any other examples of people who felt either were like didn't realize they had a gift and it was so obvious to everyone else around them, but they really didn't feel it. They sort of discounted it or just it came so naturally so they didn't see it as a gift. Any stories of that or any other stories of people who were like this lawyer or were maybe resistant to it because it seemed so out of their identity or so out of their, you know, what they did or what they'd been told they should be recognized for or who they should be?
Yeah. In my practice, for a long time, I saw mostly people in midlife because that was kind of my niche. But I'm getting more and more young people coming to me now. And an example of that I see with them is a lot of them have the gift of wisdom.
Mm.
And they were born with this gift. But it's been really hard for them at times because, you know, they were young, so people didn't take them seriously. But they knew, you know, they just have this gift that comes from the source. And sometimes it takes them a while in order to get the confidence and get the feedback from others, you know, to say that, hey, if we need to, you know a practical route to go, we're going to ask Jane. Yeah, she just always comes up with the wise choice and the direction we need to go in. You know, so that's an example of they could really kind of take that for granted because it's just the way who they are and it's always been that way, but they could run into some roadblocks and especially adults not taking them seriously until they really get the confidence to say that, okay, this is a gift that I have, and they may have to be a little discerning about who they offer it to.
Right, which seems like another gift, the gift of discernment, possibly.
Exactly.
So there's the gift of facilitation, encouragement, service, administration, healing, hospitality, the gift of touch, the gift of wisdom. Are there any others that sort of come up for you? Or that?
Yeah, I mean, some people have the gift of, spiritual guidance or spiritual sensitivity, so they can really act as a bridge between different states of consciousness. So in our natural gift circles, we always start with a meditation. And that's partly so that, you know, people can let go of their day so they can really arrive and be present to each other. But it's also part of the formula that we use is that I think the only way we can discover our gifts and to remember our gifts, because we're constantly forgetting because we, you know, operate predominantly from an ego-based culture, and that's the reinforcing we get. So we need some sort of remembrance practice. So there are certain people that really have the gift of, because they really either naturally have that or they've developed it, or and some gift does say can be in the seed form, but that it doesn't emerge till later in life. And then we start, we meet a teacher and we start to really train. So, for example, I've been in meditating for over 20 years, so I just can't imagine starting a day without it. And even before and in between clients, I always do a little meditation. And so if I'm going to try to help them to access different dimensions of themselves, then I need to be constantly doing that work with myself to be aware that there's, you know, different levels of consciousness that I can access and help other people do that as well. So that's when I think is really essential in discovering gifts, because it comes from that deep source. And once you discover that deeper dimension of yourself, like dropping into the stillness of the ocean, it's incredibly restorative. And the resources that come from the source are just like the gifts. They're the gift. They keep on giving, you know. So like, sort of like love can't be diminished. You know, the gift of facilitation, the more you use it, it's a gift for, you know, you keep giving it and it keeps on giving, you know. So it's a real counter to this depletion of the natural resources on the planet, is to start really honoring and cultivating a sense of our innate gifts.
I love that. One of the things that's striking me as we're talking is how the sort of our niche, or who we, the need that we're here to serve in the world, that we can serve, and the gifts that we have can sometimes show up in different streams in our life. Like you're saying, this woman might have this gift of administration and she is naturally drawn to it. She's good at it. She does all the administrative jobs. But because of who she's working for and the bigger cause she's working for, there's a way she could translate that as like, oh, well, this isn't my gift. This isn't my thing. It's not what makes me happy. But when she pairs that with something meaningful, maybe that's because she's helping people who've struggled in the same way she did or something else, there's a way that work becomes meaningful. I remember my friend Alex Baisley was talking about this one mechanic. No, it was an electrician who he was working with. And he told him the story about how he was kind of getting sick of the work. And then one day, this poster came across the desk, and it was for, they needed an electrician for this community in Africa. They had a school they were building, but they needed somebody who could wire it up. And he saw it, and his heart kind of leapt, and he's like, oh, that would be so wonderful, but I'm so busy and money, and I can't. So he just crumpled it up and he threw it away. But then later, somehow it came back on his desk, a different version of it. And then it came up three times in really synchronistic ways. And he was talking to his wife about it, and she said, well, do you want to do it? And he said, man, more than anything, that would be so wonderful. And the and he said, I have money and all that. And his wife was just said, you know, I guess had the real gift of encouragement. She was just like, you do this. We'll figure this out, but you need to do this. And so he ended up going to Africa, and he wired up this school. And he was describing this moment of it was all wired up, and he flicked the switch, and it was at night, and all of the lights went on in the school, and or the hospital it might have been. All the lights go on, and the whole village burst into song. In that moment, and he just, you know, welled up with tears, and it struck him that it was the exact same gifts, it was the exact same skill that he'd done in all these jobs, but who he was doing it for, and the need that he was serving in the world was so was different, and that was the only thing that was different. But how profound that was for him to be giving those gifts in a way that felt more meaningful to him.
What a beautiful story. I mean, that's so accurate. A lot of people try to discover their purpose, and then they go to a workshop and think, okay, that's it, that's my purpose. But then they lose it again, and I think part of the trouble is what you're describing in this story is that discovering the purpose or discovering the gifts, then they have to be given. So it's like it's more about being on purpose. And so every day what I've developed is a little practice that I call the IC map, but it's like inner compass meditative awareness practice, so that every morning I'm starting the day with resting into the source, into the mystery, the best I'm able to let go of me and get out of the way and just rest into being. And then out of that, really calling on what's the need that I have for today. You know, calling from to the deep heart of the source of, you know, what resource do I need to serve as best I can today? So maybe that what emerges is some a deep sense of peace. Mm. And then again, it's like, okay, how do I orient my day today toward my purpose? Okay, what gifts do I have? And that's a priority for my day is, you know, to be able to. At the Meaningful Life Design Center, we try to focus on three pillars is really giving your gifts for more purpose, for more of a vocation in the world. Mm. And then also really showing up in our relationships, so our relationship really have depth and intimacy. And then finally, the vitality of body, mind, and spirit, so you really have the energy and sense of playfulness and you can bring to those parts of your life. So that part of finding the meaningful need, like you described in that story, it really lights up your life. So one of the measurements is a sense of joy, a deep sense of joy and contentment. So, you know, I like to call myself a practitioner of meaning and purpose. So it's like, okay, it's never arriving. It's like every day you're reorienting your compass toward, okay, we're always going to be off a little bit, like the musician who, you know, loves their music, so they practice every day. We become practitioners, and every morning you might need to tune up the violin, you know, to be able to play the best kind of music you can for that day. And some days, you know, you just haven't had a good night's sleep, so what comes out is kind of crocodile music. Another example of the gifts of getting clear on the meaningful need, somebody could have the gift of compassion, say. And many people can be compassionate people, but at least in the Christian monastic tradition, they see the gift of compassion as acts of compassion, so doing deeds of service, say, serving in a homeless shelter or bathing lepers or feeding hungry people, or so you're really bringing your acts of compassion to meet a very specific practical need. So somebody could have that gift of compassion, but maybe for them it's not people, it's animals. So it's when they bring that gift of compassion to animals, that's when they really find the joy, you know. So they start by volunteering perhaps at a, you know, a bird rescue center or something like that, and they just find, wow, okay, I have my job, but I go volunteer here, and I just, the day just flies by, and I feel recharged at the end of the day, and all this passion, I can't wait to go back till next Saturday. So then, you know, then they start looking into, gee, maybe there's a way I could train in this so that I could do more of it.
One of the thoughts that was coming up, too, is just, because you've been talking about the need in the world, and realizing, like, sometimes, you know, when I'll talk about niche, there's this idea of you've got this some person and they're on, let's say, call it Island A, and they're struggling on Island A because they've got some problems, some symptoms they don't like, and they want to be on Island B where things are better. But it just strikes me too how it feels a lot more meaningful when it's nice to add that layer of, like, knowing that that Island A, it's not just one person. There's a whole community of people. There's a whole need in the world of people struggling with that issue. And then how do we bring our gifts to that? And it strikes me, too, how many people I think really never get any support in identifying what their gifts are. And so they're kind of left on their own to identify what their gifts are. And it seems like, so one of the ways that people can sort of get in touch with their gifts or maybe their dreams, reflections from others, really just looking at what are they good at, what are they naturally drawn to. Are there any sort of home study versions of how people can connect with their gifts and identify those?
Let's see. To where I want to go to is traditionally how people started to enter into this process is with a vision quest.
Mm.
So Michael and I have both trained in wilderness leadership as well and have studied deeply with, let's say, this African shaman and the native traditions. And there's different ones, but for example, what's classic all through the, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years is to find a place in nature and create a circle of stones. And the idea is not to do it just as a solo, is to really bring your tribe together. And I did this on my 40th birthday. I got some people who were really close to me and really wanted to go deeper in my life. So I took some time and really set an intention and then got some witnessing by my little village and then headed out and sat on a mountain and just sat all night and watched the sunrise the next morning and really hoped for, like the initiates, to hope of a big dream. Now, it wasn't enough just for, you know, often they would dream of, you know, some in the native tradition, often say an animal would come. And often when I work with people, I will work with their inner animal. Quite often, say, a single mom comes and she's really stressed because she not only has to be mom 24 hours a day, but now she's also got to be, you know, taking care of the expenses and stuff. And she's really stressed, but she can't afford to be sick, so she's really holding it all together. Mm. But gradually she's getting really exhausted. So she'll have a dream of, say, a bear. This is really common, or an owl. Well, I can facilitate a process for her where she can access the part of her in the dream that's afraid of the bear. That's not all of who she is, but there's a part of her that's really getting afraid because she's actually in danger of collapsing. Yeah. And then the bear is actually, the native people would call it her gift or her medicine. And so bear medicine or bear energy is trying to come in as a resource for her, but she's afraid of it because it looks in this animal form. It's wild. It's instinctual. Mm-hmm. Well, in the one of the processes that I use, then I can have the woman step into her bear. And it's I really love it when it happens because often the small woman all of a sudden becomes a huge presence in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to dialogue with a bear. And the bear has a lot of wisdom for her. It represents part of her instinctual nature. And so the bear has come to teach her a lot of things. And the gifts can really come out of that. Say the bear really knows how to forage for berries, so knows, you know, healthy food, and also really knows how to hibernate. So the woman's really in danger, and I see this with women a lot these days, because the mother part of them is often on 24/7. And so sometimes I'll ask that part of them, if you were a major appliance, what appliance would you be? And they usually say something like a washing machine or a blender. And so I'll say, well, do you realize that you're running your washing machine 24 hours a day? No wonder you're burning out your adrenals.
Yeah.
And so that's often the case, is they end up having some adrenal fatigue or chronic fatigue. And so then the bear comes in as this incredible ally. That's why I like to call it the natural gifts. You know, the bear is part of their true nature, you know, that we're not so separate from nature, but our culture has led us to believe that. So in the wilderness of her dreams has come this incredible ally and resource for her. And the bear is also really powerful. So if she taps into this, like any mother whose child is threatened, they can have the power to lift a car up, you know. So
yeah.
She, you know, she has these inner resources, and so in my office I get to talk with a businessman's owl, and just like you can imagine, the owl is really wise and
yeah.
just lays out, you know, the wisdom of what the gifts this man's carrying, and also tells me exactly what the psychological prognosis is, which is kind of astounding. But I love the notion that we each carry our own wisdom and just have some help to uncover that.
It strikes me too how freeing it is when people can really get clear on what these gifts are. I think, you know, there's a lot of people in the Nishing for Hippies program are doing it. There's a lot of kind of life coaches and healers and service providers in that kind of way. And I think there's a way that people can sort of maybe get a sense of what they're supposed to be like as a healer. You know, I'm supposed to be gentle. I'm supposed to, you know, speak in very soft tones all the time. But it strikes me that we try to fit ourselves into this mold, and yet maybe their gift is that they've got a very strong logical mind and they've got a real problem-solving capacity, and they could still operate in the same domain but be bringing different gifts and a very different tone, a different vibe, a different way of doing the same thing that could really actually appeal to people who are turned off by all the other stuff.
Yeah, it's really true. Like, you know, all of a sudden we can get a notion of what a healer should look like or a therapist should look like, and then it's easy to get trapped into, you know, I should always be patient and kind and gentle and compassionate. And the truth is we're really multifaceted beings. So looking at nature as a model, it's like, oh, okay, in this moment I really need the gentleness of the deer. And that has its own power in this moment. It's gentleness is what's needed. And I know my mentor, I had experienced so many teachers who were really powerful, you know, and I thought as a man I had to break through this and that. And it was when I met the power of gentleness that just wafted right through my armor and just touched my heart, and I just started to sob. So in that moment it was the power of gentleness that was needed. But to be able to really discover, okay, you know, what's that, you know, what somebody's... what's needed in this moment, and so be able to have that kind of matching for, you know, that the two people are on a journey together of discovery, and it's not so linear of, you know, client and therapist. It's like both are affecting each other. I think of it more of a mentoring moment. You know, that both people are astounded by what the third presence that's breathing them both reveals.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like you're all of a sudden you have an encounter with the mystery, and it's like, and I know as, you know, if we're going to access depth, then, you know, trying to always keep an eye on that there's my perspective, your perspective, but I sense that, I think you mentioned there's other people on the call, so... You know, thank you to whoever is listening and holding the space for us, because, you know, even though they haven't spoken, maybe they're really helping us to go deeper together, and that there's some other presence, which is the space between the notes, that if we only, you know, allow our attention to also notice that, then the whole conversation may just drop into some other mysterious dimension of where the gifts arise from.
I'm curious your sense of, you know, sometimes people get really good at something because it's a compensating mechanism. You know, so they develop a certain hardness in their life, which in one way is a skill and a gift, but in other ways compensating to protect themselves. And I'm curious how you help people differentiate between what has come up to, yeah, to compensate, to protect, to deal with their life. And what's a real, natural, authentic gift for them?
Yeah, working with somebody's protection is one of the most important parts of any kind of depth work.
Mm.
And all of us, I think, have some sort of what some psychologists call a compensatory identity.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like it is some, you know, the word personality comes from the Greek word persona, which means mask. So it is compensating, it is protecting us, and we need it for social interaction. And so, you know, we really need to have a safe container to investigate deeper than that. And what I've learned the hard way, believe me, is not to trash that. You know, some of the mystical traditions, they say, oh, you have to kill your ego, and right. I don't believe that at all. It's much more of, it's kind of like, as I say in metaphor, the caterpillar has to die to that perspective, but it does reemerge as the center of the butterfly. And the wings of the butterfly represent being able to hold a greater consciousness. The caterpillar is more referenced outwardly, constantly consuming, you know, eating and eating and eating. But sooner or later, that's really detrimental to the environment, as we know on our finite planet here. Constant growth is not sustainable. So then not only individuals, but couples, groups, and even countries, you know, have to really look at, you know, the ones who are starting to awaken to deeper levels of consciousness. You know, we're incredibly interdependent as a planet. So, you know, how do we make this shift to greater consciousness where we can have the wings of the butterfly that represent the color, the beauty of something that we really hold precious? And I think that's part of the gifts, is there's a kind of astonishing beauty of the gifts that really resonates deeply with nature. So the butterfly is, in depth psychology, is seen as the symbol of the soul. And so now the person who has more of that soul-centric consciousness, like the butterfly, their purpose now is about pollination. You know, they're going around spreading the nectar, you know, they're about propagating, you know, pollinating, bringing their gifts, you know, really inspiring other people, and, you know, coming together in little tribes to try to, you know, strengthen the imaginal cells so that we create some sort of tipping point to overwhelm the caterpillar consciousness that is, you know, thinking in too small a perspective in us individually, or as a couple, or as some countries. I believe the United States is going through that process right now. They're going through an incredible shift as a culture to shift out of that. The majority, I think, is more in that caterpillar stage of consciousness. And there's a collective there, a small group, but a very determined group to come, that want to come together and try to shift the whole country into a greater shift of consciousness. But they may have to go into a very humble place of that, closer to the ground, to really deal with some of the grief. And there's incredible elders like Maladoma Somme who are helping us to, you know, to honor both directions, not just the upwardly direction up into more and more and more and more light and more spirit, but the direction down into the dark, into the wound, the tomb, the cocoon, the fecund, moist, feminine place. So we need both of those directions and some sort of center where we can embrace it all.
Yeah. A story came up from you as you were sharing. There was a client I was working with one day, and we had a phone call scheduled, and somehow she hadn't gotten the phone number for it. And so, and I wasn't on checking my email, but she sent an email an hour before saying, I don't have the phone number. And then 5 minutes before, I don't still have the phone. And she was clearly sort of upset. So I called her, and sent her the number we got on the phone, and she was kind of annoyed by that, but she relaxed and she, you know, it was okay. And then her phone started dying. She's like, shit, now I have to go to the payphone outside. And so she went outside. She called me back from the payphone. She was clearly kind of upset. And it was interesting because I was looking at her website. And I said, you know, what's interesting is your website is like all of these like blue, soft, gentle colors. There's waterfalls and rain. But, you know, it's all about relaxation and inner peace. She was a hypnotherapist. I was like, but your photo on the website is really intense and really fierce. And it's like the vibe I get from you right now is really intense and fierce. And she all of a sudden was like, went from being really fierce to like, I know, but it just gets me in trouble all the time. And I was just like, wow, I think it's beautiful. Like, let's see more of that fierceness. Like, and even though I wasn't wording it that way, it felt like it was a real gift. I was like,
yeah.
I bet you have no trouble saying no to people. And
I
like
think
setting
you're an intuitive gift to pick that up. You know, there's so much research now in brain science and neurobiology of looking at neuroscience, of looking at left brain, right brain, and and so much of our culture is oriented towards more of a left brain, logic, linear, linguistic.
Right.
But your intuitive sense of, wait a second, you know, I think that takes more of the right brain to notice that something's incongruent here. You know, and then to take that right brain into the body and going, wait a second, I sense a lot of passion. You know, and we need both. We need the blue and the red.
Right, right.
And you know, and so you trusting that, I think, is what makes you such a wonderful intuitive guide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, just to be real. You know, your people love your down to earthness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, gives them permission to also, you know, allow that that part of them that you know, really likes to relax and just be themselves.
Thank you. Yeah, it was interesting because I just thought one of the things I said to her is I said, you know, I bet you there are so many women who could use more fierceness in their life, who are very soft and very gentle and obedient and like, you know, just kind of following the rules society's given them. And it's like, I would love to see you supporting those women and how to, you know, and she didn't feel quite ready to do that in her life. And I think it was still a bit of a wound. And she, but it just struck me so clearly how this thing that she was most ashamed of actually was this incredible gift she could be giving the world. And it just strikes me how often that must happen where people have a gift that they've just, for whatever reason, they've been shamed for it. And they haven't been able to come into a right relationship with it or know where to put it, even though it's so clearly there. And
yeah, that's why midlife is really appealing to me. And I find midlife is not just an age, but it's like a psychological state. It's sort of like when you reach, you know, the end of a certain way of being, then you reach a crisis in identity. And for, you know, really generalizing, women have been socialized to, you know, be caretakers and be nice and sweet. And if they get in touch with that fiery, passionate side, you know, then there's been all kinds of labels, not just by men, but other women, you know, to kind of imprison them in some sort of caricature. And then conversely, men too, I found, as I say, in my own midlife of being really entrained to go a certain direction, you know, to work in construction and have a four-wheel drive. And I mean, the only color I was allowed was blue, you know, it's like, or brown. So
yeah.
It was like, okay, then midlife, it was like, I remember my first retreat with my mentor. It was like, he brought out the crayons, and he did this exercise around looking at the caricature that our parents wanted us to be. You know, so he got a piece sheet of paper, and we all had some crayons. And I sat there with my arms folded looking at crayons going, are you kidding? There's no way am I going to, you know, touch crayons. I haven't looked at them since I was, you know, five or something. But I saw everybody else, you know, going at it, and I, you know, didn't want to be left behind, but I was boiling inside. And I finally grabbed a blue crayon, and I just made a mark on the page so I could finish the exercise. Well, the woman beside me looked over, and she cracked up, and she goes, your parents wanted you to be a blue drill bit? and like, she almost summarized the whole bloody character that I, you know, I was an electrician. And,
wow.
And then, anyways, we had to put this on as a mask and put eye holes in it and then go around and socialize as if you were networking at some sort of cocktail party or I don't even know what that is. But anyways, it felt so painful to walk around in this limiting identity, you know, just one small fragment of who we were, you know. And so I jokingly tell people now, you know, it's like I used to work as an electrician, and a lot of that I worked with, you know, transformers. And now, you know, in my toolkit, I've got a little bag with a box of Kleenex and a bunch of crayons, and I work with subtle energy and transformation.
That's funny.
It's like I've been so blessed to my own father and the other males in my family really represented a certain kind of masculinity. So I've been really blessed in my midlife to find mentors who are much more whole, and they weren't afraid to really show, you know, their, if they were moved by someone, and especially me, if I really, you know, had the courage to show my vulnerability, they would, you know, show that they were touched by that, and they would cry, you know. So I find myself in that now. I've really composted a lot of my grief, and so when I sit with people, and if they are really moved, sometimes I'm really moved, and sometimes I move to tears, and so, you know, like that woman, to allow some of her passion to come through, you know, I'm allowing some of that tenderness, that some of that real vulnerability to be present, even in the session, and I find it really gives permission for others to bring that part of themselves too.
I just had a thought I was going to share. Well, I was actually curious for you, because you were an electrician, and then you know you're doing this mentorship and healing work. I'm curious for you, if you look at the through lines of, like, what do you see as the gifts that you had as an electrician, and like, do you see a way that the same gifts are being applied here in the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, actually, it's been really interesting to reflect, because electrician was just one of my jobs, but I eventually had my own electrical company, and I had 14 employees, training them all to be electronic technicians, basically. But we installed background music, alarm systems, and things like that, closed circuit television, and so we were kind of in that specialty. Well, anyways, one of the things I found really meaningful back then, and I had to reflect on it now, is that when somebody's house would be broken into by a burglar, and, you know, they'd made a mess, you know, and sometimes they would do some really nasty things, I would be called out at night to give them an estimate for a security system.
Right.
And so I saw a lot of my gifts, even in then, now that I reflect on it. Here, you know, this couple, you know, say the guy, they were a typical couple in the suburbs, you know, they worked hard, now they finally got their ideal home in the suburbs, and they've got some stuff, and she's looking after the kids, and, you know, is working maybe part-time or something, and he, like, you know, that kind of that character of a family, that he's working full-time and a lot to try to pay for the new house, and anyways, they would get broken into. And I would come out, and all of a sudden I noticed that he would minimalize. He would say, well, we got insurance. What's the big deal? You know, we can just get new stuff.
Yeah.
And that would make his wife really mad. And then she would say, well, and then she would start getting quite upset and could get quite critical of him and say, you know, he's so useless with his hands. You know, he can't, you know, do anything. And, you know, I even asked him to put in a deadbolt, and he didn't, and that's why we're broken into. And they would almost, like, get into a fight. And then they haven't seen their kids all day, so then the kids would start bouncing around. And I'd be sitting in the middle of this going, holy shit, what do I do? You know, it's like, you know, there's no way I'm going to talk about alarm systems right now. So I would start playing with the kids first. And first I liked playing with kids, and so, you know, I'd start playing with the kids a bit, so then they got a bit of attention. And then I would start just intuitively power balancing between this couple, just like I did with my parents, sometimes successfully, but mostly unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would try to acknowledge him, because I was a technician. I would try to say, well, you know, you're an accountant. It's probably taken a lot of training to be an accountant, and, gee, I don't have those skills, and try to acknowledge him, and then I would try to acknowledge her, and this is what I found that, really thanks to my mom, I think, was I really intuitively knew that her house wasn't a house, it was a home, and it was an extension, I didn't have this language then, but it's an extension of her womb. This is the place where she births her children, and this is, you know, this is the place that should be safe, you know, when the news is portraying all this danger and crime and brutality and murders, and you know, this is the one place, you know, that there should be some safety. And she wants her guy to be able to be her protector. And he doesn't, he's been so socialized like I was to be in his left brain and his head, and the way he shows his love is to go and work a lot and try to, you know, pay for all the stuff that they think that will give them a happy life. But they're not happy. They're, you know, estranged from their neighbors. You know, if it weren't for meeting the kid, you know, if the kids meeting each other, they might not ever even meet each other. And so what I realized is that I needed to really honor her fear, and that this house was a home. And so I was doing some kind of basic mediation in that, and really trying to also not play on their fears. Like, I was a technician. I wasn't a salesman. Like, at least I didn't see myself that way. So I wasn't looking to say that, oh, okay, they're in fear, so I could really sell them an extra expensive alarm system. You know, I would just try to calm everything down and then say, you know, what do you really need that's going to work? You know, what are you really going to use? If it's complicated, you won't even use it. So, you know, it should be like red for stop and green for go.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a lot of my technicians, they would get so complicated that because they like techno speak, the people wouldn't even understand it, so they wouldn't even bother using it. So I think I brought a lot of that to my training in psychology and spirituality. First off, I tried to go the degree route, and I found it really too heady. So then I thought, no, I'm going to go the apprenticeship route, and I found some really good basis for that. So I found what I considered some of the best elders in the field, and I thought, okay, I'm going to roll up my sleeves, and I'm going to do my work, you know, and really try to heal as much as I can. And by, you know, doing it as an apprentice, I'll learn as much as I can through studying with teachers in the field. And so what I learn is, you know, if you love it, it's like playing music. It's a lifelong journey. So, you know, first off, my association requires I do get continuing education credits every year, but I love it. So my wife's just as passionate. So, you know, we often are going to retreats and workshops and constantly learning and applying it to our relationship. And a lot of our friends are into it too. So seeing it as an apprenticeship really helped, because I was a tradesman, and I see that, you know, there's competent tradesmen. And once you get competent, you know, you get paid for your work. But up to that point, you may be an apprentice. And then, you know, if you become a master tradesperson, then you can teach others. So there's, I like that kind of, that trajectory. You know, it takes time to really learn the craft of healing, and you have, you really, there's no other way but to do your own work.
Yeah. I know there are some people who are listening over the phone, so I'm just going to invite you, if you're listening, there are two things I'd actually really be curious to get from you. One, if there are any questions you have for David, but also if there are any gifts that you feel like we haven't named that are gifts that people might just be kind of inherently have, they're born with something that they're just, somebody could be really good at, something that somebody might really be able to bring to the world and not have found a space for. Maybe this is a gift that you feel like you have, or gifts that you've witnessed in others. But so if there are either any questions you have, or gifts that you feel like are important to name and to honor and to bring on the table, I'd love to invite you to share those. And I wanted to reflect, David, some of the gifts that I've sort of heard that have come up for me in the conversation. So the gift of facilitation, again, I heard. The gift of encouragement, which is so interesting to me, for me to think of that as a gift, because I think for most people, it wouldn't even occur to them that some people are naturally good at that and some people aren't. And I think we've all had the experience of being around people who were terrible at encouragement when it was really needed. There's the gift of service, the gift of administration, that kind of organizing things, the gift of healing, the gift of hospitality, the gift of touch, which is also another interesting one that I hadn't really thought of as a gift, but it's clearly so true that some people, they're so good at that. The gift of wisdom, the gift of spiritual guidance and sensitivity to those things, the gift of compassion, the gift of fierceness and protection, the gift of intuition, the gift of humor, of gentleness, playfulness and fun, The gift of listening, the gift of performing and entertaining. I was also thinking of the gift of design and decoration. Some people are just so good at setting up a space, and you know, and other people just would have no idea how to do that. The gift of conflict resolution, and also the gift of sort of logical thinking and problem solving in that way. But yeah, those were all things that sort of came up for me as we were listening, and it's refreshing to know how many of them there are, and also how it's so amazing how some of us are so naturally gifted in one area and just not in another. And we can learn, but it's a learned thing. It's not that it comes so easily and naturally to us. Yeah. Let's see if anyone posted anything. Yeah, somebody just kind of copied what I said. Great. Somebody was saying this brings a gardener's multiple intelligences to mind. Are you familiar with that, David?
Yes.
Does that seem like a similar thing to you, then, the gifts thing, the multiple intelligences and the gifts piece?
Yeah, very much so. I don't know about when you went to school, but when I did, they just really measured IQ, which is only one way of measuring intelligence. So, you know, people nowadays, it's really in the schools as a theory, but sometimes it doesn't filter down into the individual teacher's practice. But so, for example, somebody has a kinesthetic intelligence. So there's a real gift in somebody who's a natural athlete or dancer.
Yeah.
And somebody could have the gift of leadership. You know, so a small child, they're instantly leading the group, you know, but maybe they're not doing so well at spelling or, you know, and if that's missed, you know, there's people like, I think Einstein and Carl Jung, some of them failed high school.
Right.
You know, so it's like, so multiple intelligence is, I think, is another way in to be able to talk about this stuff. So there's, another way to talk about it is in typology.
Right.
Like, for example, there's the Enneagram, if you've ever heard of that.
Sure, sure.
So that's a wonderful resource that I use quite a bit because it can also show what compensatory identity somebody has. Here's the personality, structure that is kind of like a defense system, but behind that is an essential gift. And so you can get at that through that kind of work if you go deeper. Like a lot of these things, sometimes it's presented more on the pop psychology or which can be helpful, but sometimes people use it to kind of pigeonhole people, and that's not very useful. But the Enneagram is a really deep mystical study. In fact, they use it in Christian monastic tradition now. They've been closely guarded about that secret because it actually comes from the Sufi mystics, they say. And for a long time, Christianity didn't want to acknowledge any kind of influences from Islam or anywhere else.
Right.
But the Enneagram is a very deep mystical study when somebody goes quite into it. And universal intelligences, too. There's Howard Gardner was the researcher from Harvard, I think, that first brought that forward. And I think he's even added several on since. And there's some free online testing that you can find to determine what your multiple intelligences are. There's a lot of great free online testing that you can do to help support this kind of stuff.
I love it. So I want to begin to wrap up. It doesn't look like there are any immediate questions. So a few things. First of all, David, I would love to, and I think people listening would just love, love, love to see you do a 6-week online course where they could learn from you at a distance if they don't live in Vancouver. So let me just plant that seed that I think that would be great, and there'd be a great response, and I'd want to promote it.
That seed is there, and thanks for shedding some light on it because it's bursting at the seams.
Yes, I want to see it happen. I think it would just be wonderful. And the other one is, I could imagine some people listening to this or reading the transcript later might want to work with you or could feel really drawn to, yeah, just connecting with somebody who could mentor them and really connecting with what their gifts are and how they can best be sharing those in the world. And I'm curious, so how could people reach you? How do they find you?
Yeah, on our website, www.meaningfullifedesign.com.
Okay.
So there's a blurb about me and on there, and there's some videos of my partner Michael and I, and there's some free stuff on there, a little meditation if somebody wants to begin in that direction. There's a rebalancing practice there that can be quite helpful to balance between too much doing and accessing our being. We see people one-on-one. We offer a free half-hour consultation, either by phone or by Skype or in person, because it's really important when you choose somebody to do deeper work that there's a real resonance, you know. So you'll feel that, and you pick up some of that from the written word, but it's good to, you know, just fling at some of your questions. And so we offer a free half-hour for that. And our most popular thing is a kind of a 10-session package where we try to guide people into this deeper cocoon. And there's a discount if they sign up for the package. And then what I call my meaning and purpose process I do over 3 sessions with somebody. It's 6 hours, so it's quite intense and quite a journey. An hour and a half the first session, 3 hours for the second one, and an hour and a half to wrap up. And we go into a deep discovery process around their unique journey around the gifts. And like you just said, I'm just putting that together in a day-long workshop for local folks to reduce the cost and create the community around it. And then we'll probably put together a 6-week or 8-week online class around it, just again trying to learn from you and others of how to do that in a way that is skillful.
Yeah.
And then finally, if it's really in the beginning stages, and it's just all volunteer driven, but we have the Natural Gift Society. And we just got our incorporation as a nonprofit society, and I'm just about to put on the instructions for starting your own gift circle.
Oh, I love it.
A great community, and you can borrow me or one of us to help you get started if you're local or even over the phone or Skype, and something of our outreach so that we can hopefully access. Our society has big dreams to try to access people who can't usually afford to go for counseling or mentoring services. So we especially reach young people and older people. And I just did some storytelling at a school with 7- and 8-year-olds, helping them to discover their gifts. I had just a blast. I got to bring in an African drum and a candle and had them all sit on the floor like, we were sitting around a campfire, and I told them a Native initiation story, and it was just mind-blowing. At 7, 8 years old, they totally get it. You know, they haven't indoctrinated yet, so they were. I had them all identifying what their power animal was, and it was so cute. I suggested that they could use alternate hand journaling to dialogue with their animal, and one little girl asked her polar bear if she had a gift. And her polar bear says, yes, you have the gift of wisdom, and you may share this gift with many people in your lifetime.
Wow.
8 years old. And then I have a gig with a senior center in September to bring this to older people and to try to, because a lot of the seniors, they unfortunately have become olders and not, as one of my mentors says, they're olders and not elders.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately they were never taught that they had gifts. So they're just, you know, they're so lonely sitting in a senior's home. And there's this incredible resource, you know, of older people. So, you know, I'd love to start a band of mischievous storytellers that we go in and we, you know, really awaken some of these seniors to their gifts so that the young people will have some elders that they can look to for helping them to go on a vision quest, so they have some elders who, you know, are not so busy with their the middle of their life, you know, doing, that they can really be a meaningful presence to witness their journey.
That sounds so amazing. Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us, and I'll get you a copy of the transcript and recording of the call so you can share that if it's useful. Yeah, thank you. I know everyone enjoyed it. There have been some comments on the wall, people saying, what a great speaker, lighthearted, inspiring, great choice, Ted, and people really loved it. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Wonderful. Always a pleasure, Ted. Look forward to when we meet again.
Yes. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Bye now. Bye.